Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com. From the jury selection, to the opening arguments, to the witness testimony and cross-examination, and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title the Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Hey there. This episode has a bit of adult language in it. Even if you wanted to avoid talking about what happened at Travis Scott's Astroworld last week, it would be hard to do. The algorithms simply won't let you.
I saw the videos on Saturday morning after everything happened. They were pretty much all over the internet. My wife woke me up with it.
Tom Bryan writes for Stereo Gum.
My kids barely know who Travis Scott is, but they're on TikTok, and they definitely had opinions about it by, like, Sunday.
At least 8 people died, and hundreds were injured last Friday, when a surging crowd pushed the breath out of Astroworld's audience of thousands. 2 of the dead were high schoolers. The oldest victim was just 27. And the entire show was caught on tape. There is video of Travis Scott singing while an unconscious concert goer is carried out just yards away from him. There's video of fans dancing on an ambulance as medics try to reach someone who's in trouble.
People are fucking dying. I'm gonna save somebody's life. Somebody's kid.
Who has this gun?
And then there's tape of people begging for help.
That's okay, we'll see you real quick.
This clip shows a man and a woman who've climbed up on a platform. That is where a cameraman is live streaming the performance for Apple Music. Their screams get cut off by the show as the camera guy waves them off. They're yelling at him. They're saying, stop the concert, but also just, there's someone dead down here. Stop the concert. And he sort of brushes them off. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it does surprise me, but it also makes its own morbid kind of sense. These things are these sort of vast beasts, these concerts, and this cameraman who's trying to film his thing for Apple is probably not thinking about the safety of the people underneath him. It probably doesn't even occur to him that he has any power to stop it, even if he thinks it should be done. It becomes an out-of-control thing. They decided about 20 minutes into the show that it had become a mass casualty incident.
But the show kept going.
And the show kept going. The Houston police were worried about a riot if they stopped it. And so they let it keep going for another 40 minutes. And if they had stopped it, you know, who knows how things would have turned out. I don't think they would have turned out worse.
Today on the show, sorting out just who's to blame when a concert turns deadly. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Can you give me a Travis Scott 101, like where he came from and what his music's like?
Travis Scott is from Houston. The Astroworld Festival is his festival. He started out as a rapper and producer who worked under Kanye West. He, I believe, co-produced some of the tracks on the Yeezus album that Kanye West put out. Around 2013, Travis Scott emerged as his own artist. And he works as a rapper. He's a sort of like psychedelic figure.
What do you mean when you say that, a psychedelic figure?
He likes to create this sort of like woozy mystical sound. So Houston has this long tradition of what's called screw music.
Damn, 3 a.m, still going down. What's up, H-Town? Southside.
Where legendary DJ named DJ Screw took tracks, slowed them way down, and made them sound alien and otherworldly and just super woozy and trippy. That's a sound that was specifically built because it sounded good when you were under the influence of codeine cough syrup. Which is what killed DJ Screw in 2000.
Lean, probably.
Yeah, lean. So as that sound and that drug both became more popular, Travis Scott integrated little bits of it into his music without going the full Screw style. His music is sort of like built out of classic Houston rap sounds, but it brings in different things.
Is there a specific song?
Well, the Sicko Mode is the anthem.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gone on you with the pick and roll. Younger Flame here in Sicko Mode.
Made this here with all the ice on in the booth. It sounds anthemic, but it keeps twisting. It sounds like three or four different songs all glued together.
Hmm.
It's full of samples, it's full of allusions. And it has something like, it has dozens of credited songwriters because it has so many samples and because the songs that it samples sample other songs. So these tracks become these sort of like vast multi-headed beasts. He is probably, or has been up until now, probably one of the five or six biggest rappers in the world. He creates a lot of excitement around just the release of a single. And a lot of that has to do with his ability to create these like brand partnerships, which are a huge part of his identity. Like McDonald's had a Travis Scott meal.
What's up, world? Yeah, you. I'm Travis Scott. This is my McDonald's order. Follow me.
He has sneakers that Nike makes. He is a corporate friendly figure.
He's not a businessman. He's a businessman.
Yeah. He has made himself and other people very rich through these sort of sponsorship deal things that he does.
So he's brand friendly. He's really popular. But he's also known for his shows getting wild.
Yeah.
And this has been true since the beginning. Like, you've talked about how you went to a show 7 years ago when he didn't even have an album. And already you could see this. What did you see there?
I saw him for the first time in 2014 in Austin during South by Southwest when he was a mixtape rapper. He had like one big mixtape out, nothing that you could really describe as a hit. When he performed, and this is my first time seeing him, he didn't really rap on stage. This really struck me. His thing is kind of sort of shouting melodic catchphrases. It's about sort of capturing a certain feeling. So when he plays live, it's always about telling the crowd how to react, saying, everybody jump up this way, divide in half this way. We're all gonna rage together. It's all gonna be a big mosh pit.
Everybody hands up. So right now, it's this side right here versus this side right here. Okay? This is not no friendly competition, motherfuckers. This is a motherfucking rage fest.
Moshing in rap shows has really, really grown over the past 6 or 7 years. It's about sort of creating this feeling of catharsis. And that's what he does. That has made him a huge live draw. It can make for an environment that is unpredictable and euphoric in some ways, but it can also be really unstable and potentially dangerous.
Yeah, the energy that you're describing at Travis Scott shows, it was notable to me how often it had gone wrong before this past weekend. I wonder if you can describe some of the previous incidents where Travis Scott held a concert, something went wrong, and various people are trying to hold him accountable.
Yeah, so the big thing that happened, the sort of like emblematic moment before this one, was at Terminal 5 in New York, which is a very tall concrete venue with balconies that go up several floors. This one show a few years ago, I believe what happened was he sort of shined the spotlight on somebody who was hanging from a second floor balcony and said, "Go ahead, they'll catch you." And then a while later, somebody fell, or he says was pushed from a third floor balcony and fell and was paralyzed on the ground. And apparently was then Travis Scott told people to bring him up on stage after he fell. And so this guy is now partially paralyzed. He tried suing Travis Scott.
I think the lawsuit's still ongoing. Like I read there's going to be some kind of testimony in December. And I think part of his claim is that, you know, Travis Scott had me brought onto the stage, but if I'd gotten medical attention sooner, I wouldn't be paralyzed.
Yeah, a pretty clear case of a performer who wasn't thinking clearly and did not necessarily have his audience's best interests in mind. And a big thing, I mean, you know, he has told crowds to smash through barriers before, and he has been arrested for it a couple of times and sort of pleaded down to minor charges. In the past week, since Astroworld, there have been a lot of videos being sent around online of performers stopping shows to make sure that everybody's okay and to get help to people. And Travis Scott has done that in the past, but he has also added to situations and helped create situations where people could get hurt.
Yeah, I was struck by this piece of video from the documentary about Travis Scott that I think was on Netflix, where you see the crew that's getting ready to start a show openly talking about the fact that the crowd is going to get wild, people are going to have trouble breathing.
If they push up against the front and spread all the way across that and fill in the whole front floor. So the pressure becomes very great up against the barricade. You will see a lot of crowd surfers in general, but also you see a lot of kids that are just trying to get out and get to safety because they can't breathe because it's so compact.
But it wasn't even a warning. It was said casually.
Yeah, it was like, this is what these shows are like. Be ready for it. And Travis Scott has been proud of being able to create that atmosphere before. He's bragged about it. He has a line on one of his songs that says,
"And it ain't a mosh pit if ain't no injuries. I got him stage diving at the nosebleeds."
So this has been a point of pride, his ability to make things go crazy, to set it off.
It seems like in Houston, things went wrong from the start. Like, there was one clip making the rounds of how early, like 2 p.m., before anyone was really on the stage, a bunch of concert goers rushed the barricades, and they came through, and it was basically a stampede of people. Eventually, the police are there with horses, but they can't even stop anyone.
Yeah, and that by itself, for a Travis Scott show, I think something like that is pretty routine, where a bunch of people bust their way in. And I think that is the sort of thing that he has helped to encourage. The thing where these people got basically crushed to death while he was performing, that's something else. Like, that is not routine.
Yeah. I mean, Scott took the stage around 9 o'clock. And my understanding is, or at least this is what the head of the Houston Police Department is saying, that he basically warned Scott, there's an energy out there. Be careful. You know, I'm worried. How did things start to go wrong?
The way this festival was set up was there were two stages. And usually at a music festival where there's two stages, people play on alternating stages. Somebody plays while somebody else is setting up, and it keeps going back and forth. At the first day of Astroworld, all of the earlier acts in the day played on one stage while the other stage was empty. This was Travis Scott's own stage. It cost, I believe, a reported $5 million to build. He had it set up to become this whole spectacle. Half an hour before he starts playing, the screens near the stage start a countdown for when he's going to go on. So it creates this big burst of excitement and energy when he is about to start. So the people who have been lined up at the front of this stage waiting for him to start for a while, they get sort of crushed by the big, big groups of people who come running over to the stage when the countdown starts up. So I think by the time Travis Scott even came on stage, things were very chaotic.
Yeah, it sounds, looking back, hindsight is 2020, but looking back now, engineering the event so that you basically create a swell of a crowd seems like a terrible error.
Yeah, and it also seems like, from everything that I've read from the accounts of the people who were there, the promoters didn't do anywhere near enough to be ready for that. It seems like a lot of the medical people who had been hired to take care of injuries were in no way ready for what was about to happen. There are stories that some of them didn't know how to do CPR. There's a video of somebody dropping a stretcher and dropping somebody on their head. There have been many, many Travis Scott shows where maybe people got bumps and bruises, but everybody was fine. This one was a bigger undertaking, and I think we're going to be going through video and trying to figure out what happened for a long time, but it certainly seems like the people who put the show together should bear a real responsibility for not being ready for what was about to happen, for what they had engineered.
Even if the staffing was inadequate, there was one person who many argue could have stopped the show, Travis Scott. And while it's hard to imagine how an artist would knowingly continue to perform after a mass casualty event has been declared by the local authorities, Tom says it's impossible to know what Scott knew when or what Scott could even see from the stage.
If you were a performer who routinely encourages this type of chaos and you look out at this vast crowd and you see chaos, like, I can understand how he didn't think that anything was going seriously wrong while playing.
Because this is what it always looks like.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a part of the show in the video where he sees an ambulance out in the crowd and he says,
"It's an ambulance in the crowd. Whoa, whoa.
It's an ambulance. Is everybody okay? Everybody wave your middle fingers if you're okay.
Everybody can put a middle finger up in the sky. Okay, what my guys?"
And then he sees a bunch of middle fingers, and so he's like, well, all right, and so he starts. There's another video of him stopping and saying, this person over here has passed out, go help them.
We need somebody to help him, somebody passed out right here. Somebody passed out right here. Hold on, don't touch him, don't touch him. Everybody just back up.
But also, if you're on stage in front of 50,000 people, as he was, then you can't see everything. You just see this mass of heaving humanity. And so I can understand how he would have looked out at that and not realized that things were going seriously wrong.
When we come back, who bears responsibility for the Astroworld tragedy?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The reason why the show didn't stop is that, at least the story we've been told, is that the local authorities thought if we stop the show, it might get worse. Do you think that hunch holds water?
No. Their specific fear was a riot. And a riot and a crowd surge are two very different things. In a riot, something like Guns N' Roses in St. Louis in, I want to say, 1991, people don't get killed. They destroy a lot of property, but nobody died that day. I think worrying about a riot is a sort of a misplaced fear. I think they should have stopped that show right away.
Yeah, I wondered a little bit, the fear of the riot. I was like, is this about who's performing and the assumptions they're making about the fans? Because it seemed like a lot of the fans were really upset. And if someone had said, we're going to stop the show, especially if the artist had said it, they would have listened.
Yeah, no, that's definitely possible. I think the Houston police is going to have to think about that for a long time. I think the way rap crowds get treated is potentially very different. A rap show is often more heavily policed than a rock show. And things about race and class come into that. The idea that the police didn't necessarily trust this crowd to leave in an orderly way and so allowed them to keep getting crushed, you know, that's messed up. And that should be really, really re-examined.
I know you want to keep the focus on the structure here and the fact that the people in charge of planning the concert did not do their job in gaming out what could have gone wrong here. But it's hard for me when I look back at Travis Scott's history as a performer, when I look at what had happened at this venue earlier in the day, when I look at the fact that this is Travis Scott's event that he was hosting, it's hard for me to look at all that and think that he doesn't bear at least some responsibility for what took place. Do you see it differently?
Not exactly. I think looking at Travis Scott, I think he certainly, if he ever returns to performing, he needs to radically rethink the way that he does it. I think there is value in shows that get wild, in mosh pits, and in the sort of the raging out thing that Travis Scott has always encouraged. I think that can be a real healthy outlet for aggression, frustration, energy, whatever. the trick with that stuff is to find a way to channel and harness that energy in a way that doesn't kill people or hurt people. He certainly is going to have to face some heavy responsibilities for that.
I guess here's where I get hung up, which is Travis Scott released a statement on Instagram.
I just want to send out prayers to the ones that was lost last night.
Where he's clearly pretty shook, but he says things like,
I'm honestly just devastated, and I could never imagine anything like this just happening.
And it's hard for me to believe that's true, because bad things have happened at his concert and he's been sued over them and arrested over them before.
Yeah. Well, this is far beyond anything that's ever happened at any of his shows. It is magnitudes worse. And if he is sincere in those videos, and I have no reason to believe that he's not, he's going to have to do some really serious soul searching about how he put these young people in danger, the responsibility that he bears for that. But I also think that in the right situation, a show like a big Travis Scott Festival performance can be safe, or at least minimally dangerous, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me wonder a little bit, can you prevent everything? Like, especially when being in a mosh pit, being close to other people, having a cathartic experience, that's part of what you're paying for. And so if you have all these barriers up and you can't get close to the artist and you're not slamming into other people, why are you there?
Yeah. And I don't know, honestly. It's maybe there's no way to stop it from happening again, which is horrifying to contemplate. Mosh pits in general work best in small shows, in smaller spaces where there is a whole, there's a community around them, there's an ethos, there's a, what's called mosh pit etiquette, where everybody knows that if somebody falls down, everybody has to pick them back up again, that everybody's in it together. A big festival like Astroworld, where people pay hundreds of dollars to get in and where they're shuttled from checkpoint to checkpoint on their way in and made to feel like cattle, that does not lend itself to a spirit of community and to an atmosphere where everybody is looking out for each other, even if they are moshing. Maybe it's not possible to have these sort of grand-scale mosh pits safely. Like, maybe that should stop. I think that if you're going to put on a festival like this, you need to be ready for things to go badly wrong, and you need to have plans in place. Otherwise, there's another thing like this waiting to happen.
Another reason Tom thinks another Astroworld is all but inevitable is because what happened last week has happened before. Tom can tick off event after event. A Who concert in 1979, where 11 people died rushing the entrance. A Pearl Jam concert in 2000, where 9 fans got crushed to death. One of the videos from Astroworld that went viral this week, it showed Travis Scott mid-performance. While in the crowd, you can see an unconscious woman being hauled away. And Tom says he's seen that kind of image before at a Rolling Stones concert at the Altamont Speedway in 1969. That concert was caught on tape, too, for a documentary.
It kind of reminds me of the part in Gimme Shelter where the guy is getting stabbed and the Rolling Stones are a few yards away singing. It's there's this sort of visceral power to the idea of someone performing while people are being physically harmed so close to them and they seem almost oblivious. There have been disasters at music festivals, at big concerts for decades. Since the birth of popular music in the rock and roll era, and since these like large concerts started, people have been dying at them. They're potentially very dangerous places. With Travis Scott, I don't know where his career goes. It's every time that somebody has had something bad happen at one of their events, it seems like it affects those people deeply and it really traumatizes them. It doesn't kill their careers. So The Who are still considered rock legends after Cincinnati. The Rolling Stones are widely beloved after Altamont. Pearl Jam, what happened at Roskilde has not affected their standing in the world. So I think this will affect Travis Scott in the short term. I certainly think a lot of his corporate partnerships will go away. I think this will affect him on a personal level. I don't think it will destroy his career. I just hope he does things differently. You know, I hope he doesn't play more shows like that, because it is clear that they can't keep happening.
Tom Bryan, I'm really grateful for you coming on the show today.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Tom Bryan is a senior editor at Stereogum. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Davis Land, Carmel Del Shad, Elena Schwartz, Danielle Hewitt, and Mary Wilson. We are led by Allison Benedict and Alicia Montgomery. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you back here on Monday.